Talk Radio 790 KABC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number two, of course. Brought to you by Larry Miller and Sit and Sleep. Still beat anyone's advertised price or your mattress is free. We've got the news quiz coming up for tickets to see Kansas or Little Steven and the Disciples of Soul. Going to be like 16, 18, 20 musicians on stage with Little Steven from the E Street Band and Bruce Springsteen. I'll tell you when to call for the news quiz. Of course, the high-low game's coming up. But right now we're joined by Joshua Green. Joshua is a reporter and correspondent for Bloomberg. Also the author of Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. And good to have you back on, Joshua. You had a big impact last time you were here. How are you?
Great. Good to be back in these exciting times.
Yeah, amazing. And the timing couldn't be better. I mean, we have Steve Bannon, who you know. You hung out with him, and we'll talk about your history with him in a moment. But Steve Bannon gave this interview to Robert Kuttner from the American Prospect, which is a liberal publication, a co-editor of the American Prospect. And he completely undercut the president as far as Kim Jong-un. The president saying, we made a very wise and well-reasoned decision, Kim did. The alternative would have been both catastrophic and unacceptable. And talking about strategy in North Korea, and Bannon gets out there and says, there's no military solution here. They got us. What do you think, knowing Bannon? I laughed, too, when I got up and they said he didn't realize he was on the record. And I thought, this guy ran a publication. This guy is smart and savvy. And reading your book, he got Trump to the White House. This is not a piker, a guy who doesn't know what he's doing. What do you think the reason for that is? Is this his Hail Mary, goodbye, I want to just shove it up your butt? Or is this I'm reinforcing who I am in the White House?
No, I really do think that he thought he was off the record. I think that he viewed Kuttner, who I actually used to work for, as being more of a think tank guy who he could conscript into his movement. And what he's interested in talking about was finding people on the left who are hawkish toward China so that he could build this outside coalition to pressure his own White House into being more aggressive in its stance toward China. I don't know what he was thinking in not stipulating that it was off the record, but the fact that Bannon called up out of the blue, that's a very Bannon thing that he used to do. You know, he did that with me. That's how I met him. And the language that he uses in the article, that's the way that Bannon talks off the record. You know, the gratuitous attacks on his enemies, the grandiose vision of what he wants to do for the world, the political coalition he wants to build. That's all Steve Bannon when he thinks that there's not a tape recorder running. I think he just screwed up royally in assuming that Kuttner, as a liberal journalist, wasn't going to turn around and publish all this.
Bannon calls white supremacists a collection of clowns. It's interesting, too. I read a piece that said the president was doubling down because he was pissed that his advisors made him come back out. And it almost feels like an apology to him that he had to redo his statement, that it wasn't good enough. And that's why he got in everybody's face and did the Q&A. And I heard and I've read that Bannon's thrilled because, and you pointed out, he loves the darkness. You point out, he says, the darkness is good. Plus, he loves this kind of turmoil and upheaval and doubling down and tripling down and don't be an apologist. Does that feel like him?
Oh, yeah, definitely. I mean, the sentiment that Bannon was expressing is genuine. And the advice that I'm sure he's given to Trump about how don't back down is genuine, too. I don't think that what's motivating Bannon, though, is any particular love or admiration for the Nazis and white supremacists. He actually says to me in the book, nobody's really picked this up, but we had a long talk about what is it that you see in these guys? And the answer is he sees them as useful idiots, the white supremacists. In the book, I talked to him about Richard Spencer, who's probably the most well-known media-friendly white nationalist out there, who's one of the marchers in Charlottesville. And Bannon tells me in an interview for the book that he thinks that Spencer is a freak and a goober, were Bannon's words. So the idea, he called them clowns to Robert Kuttner. He thinks of these people as being useful idiots who are the kind of frontline troops for Trump's political movement, true diehard believers who will get out there and provoke the left into overreacting. If you listen to what Bannon says to Kuttner, if you look at what he said to the New York Times, also that was the other on-the-record interview he gave where he said, bring on more of these racist attacks because this is dividing the country in a way that our slice of the pie is going to be bigger than their slice. This is consistent with what Bannon has been saying privately or at least in the book on the record for months, if not years.
If you had to guess, and the book's a great book, if you had to guess, is he on the outs? Is he minutes away? I had two people from Washington, two insiders, both independently emailed me the other night saying he's out by Friday. And these are people who have given me information that's been pretty accurate in the past. Does this smell like that's possible to you, or do you think this is bad?
I think it does because, you know, the one thing that you're not supposed to do in the Trump White House is go out and get too much attention for yourself. And the other thing, now that John Kelly is the chief of staff and trying to impose order, is everybody in the White House, including the president's kids, are supposed to go through Kelly so that you don't have this kind of freelancing and chaos. Well, what Bannon did, wittingly or otherwise, was to freelance and cause more chaos with these on-the-record interviews in a way that both brought attention to himself and sounded a little grandiose, you know, what deal he would not accept from North Korea, but also broke this chain of command that the president, at least ostensibly, is trying to impose. So I do think this is something that could cost Bannon his job. The only mitigating factor here, I think, is, you know, since Trump came out and kind of undid his condemnation of the Charlottesville marchers in that amazing, shocking press conference, the one guy he has seemed to echo, the president, is Steve Bannon.
Right.
Bannon's views that you shouldn't back down are Trump's views that you shouldn't back down. So it's not as if Trump is saying something other than the president. He's really the only one agreeing with the president. And that makes me wonder, is Trump really going to be willing to fire this guy? He's Trump's only real internal ally on this issue inside the White House.
Well, also, Joshua, we talk about Trump's loyalty. This is the guy who really got him there. I mean, the book starts, Ivanka told Rupert Murdoch over lunch that his dad intended to run, and Rupert was like, yeah, that is not happening. You met Bannon in 2011. I love that you said, and we talked about this last time, you thought he was like a political grifter who had made a movie with Sarah Palin in it, and he was an opportunist. He was going to ride her to fame and fortune, and then whoever was around that he can latch onto, he would. And then you started to do some due diligence and find out who the guy was, and he was for real. He really had to produce movies, and he really was on Wall Street. And then you realize he was much smarter, and I think you point out that the gifts he has are showmanship. He's got a narrative. He's got slogans. He understands the put-down, and he loves conflict. And his biggest thing is he understands the value of rage and outrage. He's shocking. Every minute that he's shocking, he's happy when he's got stuff churning. And like you said, darkness is good. So my question to you is, was the president already ideologically there and Bannon said, I've got a soulmate that I can co-opt? Or did he mold the president to his vision? Are these his policies, the president's policies?
I think most of this is Donald Trump, because if there's one thing we have learned, it's that the guy is just not amenable to being molded by anyone, even if it's for his own good. I think that Bannon recognized in him a guy who was a kind of intellectual political soulmate, and that Trump recognized the same thing. And I think the other thing that Bannon has that is what has allowed him to survive up until now is he has a way of seeing and explaining the world that Trump buys, that he agrees with, right? So when you have Trump going out there and saying, no, many sides are responsible for the violence. No, the media is being unfair to me. They're not talking about the Antifa anarchist left-wing protesters. They, too, were violent. Bannon has a running soundtrack that he can play for Trump that explains what has happened and how to interpret it in a way that is very suitable for Trump, that flatters his prejudices and his angers and those sorts of things. And it is clear that Trump is listening to Steve Bannon on this issue. Maybe other advisors will convince him that Bannon is just too much of a leaker or a damaging force. But if you listen to what Trump is saying right now, it sure sounds an awful lot like Steve Bannon, and therefore doesn't seem like the kind of thing that's going to get Bannon fired.
Interesting, since the last time we talked, look at the turmoil and change in the White House. Look at the body count. Look who's left, and Bannon is still there, which is why I want to get you on, A, to talk about the book, because it's a great book, but how this guy is a survivor and just hangs in. You know, you talk about the president berating Manafort in the book, just slamming him. And Chris Christie, we did the story about handing him the phone on election night, trying to insert himself into the win, and he got killed for that. But Bannon now is at a weird point. He's got Rupert Murdoch telling Trump, supposedly, you got to get rid of this guy. You got a McMaster war going on. I'd heard the other day that they were going to float out that McMaster is an alcoholic. I mean, they're heavy duty guns. And you got Scaramucci going on TV saying that he would have fired Bannon, which is sending a big message to Bannon. It feels like the warring factions are there, but it doesn't seem like the president, for all those who know the president, said right now, he's not down. He feels like he's in control. He's not feeling like he's losing anything. He feels like he's gaining ground.
Yeah, and the president loves it when his advisors fight each other for his favor. You know, it makes for a very messy politics. It probably doesn't help him advance his legislative agenda, and it gives we in the media all sorts of controversy and chaos to write about. But I think Trump really does love the fact that his advisors are out there fighting each other to try and get into his good graces. And as I said, this may be the final blow for Bannon. I mean, publicly going around like this and talking about this stuff may annoy Trump, because even though they may agree on policy, he may just think that Bannon is too much of a glory hog. But, you know, it's worth pointing out that in this American Prospect interview, Bannon is standing up for Trump. I mean, he's attacking his internal rivals. But unlike Gary Cohn and Steve Mnuchin, who have been leaking to reporters that they're disgusted and unhappy and frustrated with Trump in the wake of the Charlottesville riot. You know, unlike those guys, Bannon is embracing Trump wholeheartedly and isn't looking to distance himself from Trump. And Trump is a guy who so prizes loyalty and guys fighting for him, even the most terrible of circumstances, that it could be that this is the ticket to Bannon's salvation.
Fascinating. Right. Talking to Joshua Green, senior national correspondent for Bloomberg Businessweek, author of The Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the Storming of the Presidency. A fascinating point that was brought up that people really glommed onto last time you were on that loved was that he ran an internet business in Hong Kong with online gamers who were doing World of Warcraft, and he said, wait a minute, I'm losing my shirt on this, but there's a way to use this internet thing to grab all those missing white voters online and use them for a campaign, correct?
Yeah, so he owned this video game company that actually owned three large message boards where a lot of these gamers congregated, millions and millions of people who spent a lot of their time online, and actually destroyed his business by going to these video companies and saying, hey, you know, this gold farming practice, the idea, Bannon's business was kind of winning weapons and armor by hiring people to play video games all day and then selling them in the real world for a profit. You know, these gamers got angry about what was essentially cheating and pressured the gaming companies into shutting down Bannon's business. So even though that cost Bannon financially, what he took away from it is the idea that there are these massive communities of largely rootless white male online gamers who, when they get it in their mind to organize themselves and do something, can be quite a powerful force. Once Bannon moved over into Breitbart News and into right-wing populist politics, he conspired to bring this group of people over into the political world, over to Breitbart News, by hiring a guy named Milo Yiannopoulos, who became Breitbart's tech editor and went on to become a very famous internet troll, conservative provocateur, now best-selling author, who wrote about this stuff, who wrote about gaming controversies and political correctness and the alt-right. And sure enough, you know, millions of these guys stream over to Breitbart. They become Trump supporters. This is really the heart of the group of people that constitute the alt-right. And now you see down in Charlottesville a lot of these same people, some of these, you know, semi-famous online alt-right figures are now showing up in the real world, marching at real Nazi white supremacy parades. And are violent enough and angry enough that it will result in the death of people like Heather Heyer, who we saw tragically killed by the white supremacist driver at the parade last weekend.
Joshua, have you heard from Mr. Bannon since you wrote the book? Was there any response to your book?
Well, I've heard from a lot of people around Bannon. Initially, he was very unhappy because, you know, the most dangerous thing you can do as a White House advisor is to elevate your profile and. You know, a best-selling book with you on the cover is definitely going to elevate your profile. But the fact that, you know, I've been in pretty close touch with some people around Bannon. The fact that, you know, Trump hasn't seen fit to fire him, that he survived the book's publication, at least for now, you know, I think he's gotten over it. But you know, the lesson that Bannon has internalized, as have most Trump advisors, is if you become the story the way that Anthony Scaramucci became the story, that is not going to fly in Trump's White House, and you're going to be out on the street pretty soon. You know, we'll see if Bannon can survive yet another round of attacks from his rivals in the White House, or whether now it may be time for him to go too.
So, and this is a guess on your part, on a scale of 1 to 10, And you've spent a lot of time with Bannon, and you know who he is, and you watched him do what he did, which is mow down all the Republicans who were running against Trump, and then mow down this Hillary machine, which everybody thought, there's no way. There is just no way. So he's that good, and he has the connections, and he's that focused. On a scale of 1 to 10, if he does get fired from the White House, how vindictive is this guy? Is he? Would he really go and attack the president? What is his goal if he's fired?
I don't think he would attack the president. I think what he would do is attack the people around the president who he disagrees with, the same people that he trashed in Kuttner's interview, the people he calls the globalists, Jared Kushner, Steve Mnuchin, Gary Cohn. He would wage a kind of open public war against them in the expectation that this would galvanize Trump's base, a very substantial part of the Republican Party, and essentially put public pressure on Trump to move in a nationalist direction that Bannon would approve of. That would be my guess. I would have a hard time believing that Bannon would turn personally against Trump, because on some level, I think Bannon recognizes that Trump is the only politician out there willing to push these kinds of nationalist policies. You'll never have a Jeb Bush or a Marco Rubio or somebody doing like that. Only Trump is willing to smash these political norms and do things like stand up for the rights of people who want to keep conservative statues and parks and things like that. It's just too extreme for any other politician to get behind.
So, Joshua, what would you guess if he is excommunicated from the White House? What's his next act? We watched him go from Wall Street, film producing, radio, Breitbart, figuring out the gaming thing. Your ego's big enough. I don't know him, but his ego's big enough. He's in the White House. He's right there next to the president, advising him and watching his policies, watching Trump go on TV and espouse the policies that they've discussed together. What does a guy do to satisfy his ego next? What's the next act if he's not in the White House?
I think that Bannon views himself as being the leader of the nationalist movement in America, that essentially he views himself now as a political leader, and that he's pushed out of the White House. That is the role he's going to try and assume, not as an elected official, but as someone who is the arbiter of what does and does not constitute acceptable Republican orthodoxy. And so had Hillary Clinton won the election, there was going to be a massive civil war within the Republican Party between traditional movement conservatives and Bannon's brand of populist nationalists. I think if Bannon were to leave, he would begin waging that war, even though Republicans control the White House and Congress. Trump's presidency may be collateral damage. I think he'd do it in hopes of influencing Trump in his direction, but I don't have any doubt that he would continue to be a very public, maybe even a more public force in politics, pushing the same ideas outside that he's pushing on the inside.
We may know soon, Joshua. I'll give you a call as soon as it happens, or I don't know, or if it doesn't happen, we'll call you back anyway. It's a great book. Joshua Green, senior national correspondent from Bloomberg Businessweek, author of the book Devil's Bargain, Steve Bannon, Donald Trump, and the storming of the presidency. We only scratched the surface. A lot of insight on how this happened. An amazing period in our history and how they overtook the Republican Party and the Democratic Party, and knowing that you don't play the game the same way. And they broke all the rules. The Twitter is at Joshua Green. The website, businessweek.com, of course. And Joshua, we'll talk to you again soon. Thanks for your time.
Great to be back with you. Look forward to talking to you again soon.
Always appreciate it. Take care. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Coming up, we're going to do the news quiz for tickets to Little Steven and Disciples Fall and Kansas. Amazing group. Been around a long time. Dust in the Wind. If you want either of those, be prepared to call. I'll tell you when Peter Tilden, Talk Radio 790 KBC, continues right after this. Talk Radio 790 KBC, Peter Tilden at 10. Hour number 2 continues right now. I'm going to push the contest back just a moment, so everybody holding, I'll get to you in a minute, but there's new news concerning the Barcelona attack. It appears they're saying now at least 13 people dead and more than 50 injured on the streets of the popular tourist promenade. And they got some more information about the guy that they have arrested, Dris Alcabar, and he's called himself on his website or his Facebook, Dris Alcabar Soprano. The van used in the attack was rented by this guy in the town of Santa Perpetua de la Mogada, according to the identification made by the Civil Guard. Not yet clear the degree to which the police believe this guy was allegedly involved in the attack, whether he was a driver, for example. It was reported there were two suspects at the scene, and it still appears to be true preliminarily, although reports in these situations can change. A Facebook page that appeared to be the suspects gave his name, as I said, Dris Alcabar Soprano, said he lives in Ripoli and is from Marseille, France. The page shared anti-Semitic posts, a post about Muslim reaction to Christianity and Moroccan music videos. The page also says he is in a relationship. Spanish and French reporters identified the page as that of Driss Alkabir, the Barcelona subject, although police have not confirmed this. And I'm guessing Dino went right to it before they take the page down, which usually happens in these situations. The page was deleted shortly after, so it already went down. And they had extremely graphic and disturbing videos have been published on Facebook showing the sidewalk and the event that happens. It's horrible. The van plowed into the crowd along a popular Barcelona promenade, and there were anti-Semitic materials on the page identified as a suspect by European media. Let me see what else I got here. There was another post as well that appeared to target Israel. The page also shared other religious materials, although many of the posts shared music videos and calling Muslim to not respond to a Christian is one of the videos that's on there. And that's it. Well, and we'll get more news, like I said, as this plays out this morning. But apparently they're pretty onto it. They already got a social media, and that means they're contacting friends, family, relationships to try and figure out who this guy is and who else could have possibly been involved. And they're not ruling out, by the way, that there was another accomplice. Again, this morning we heard there were two people who fled and were barricaded in either a restaurant or bar. So we're getting this information piecemeal as it continues. So the latest news is at least 13 dead, more than 50 hurt in the Barcelona attack, which they're calling definitively a terror attack. You know what, Stevie, let's take a break early and then come back and have some time to play the quiz and get to some other stories before we call it a morning here. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues after this with the news quiz. Talk Radio 790 KBC. Peter Tilden at 10 continues hour number two, and it's time for our news quiz. Everybody's been holding on patiently. All the lines are lit. Let's go to Bonnie in San Pedro. How are you doing, Bonnie?
I'm doing great, Peter. Hi.
What do you do for a living?
I am retired.
Oh, okay. I thought you were at work. Are you lying? I got. Wink, wink, nod, nod. Okay. I got you. We don't get the money. We're in trouble at work. All right. So you know how we do the news quiz? It's multiple choice or true and false. Mm-hmm. And listen to me carefully is all I tell people every day. It's not all I tell people, but if you listen to me carefully, it could turn out well for you. Here we go. In a tweet this morning, Donald Trump defended the blank of Confederate statues. The blank. Was it A, the harrowing reminder of a bygone age? Was it B, the beauty? Or was it C, the impressive size and tremendous color? A, B, or C?
I'm going to go out there and say B.
Look at you. President Trump stood by his heavily criticized defense of monuments commemorating the Confederacy in a series of tweets Thursday morning. He said removing statues of Confederate generals meant removing beauty that would never be able to be comparably replaced. Irrespective of taxes, if you won the $510 million and climbing Powerball lottery drawing on Saturday, you could buy A, about two F-22 stealth fighters, B, about two of the Hope Diamonds, and C, about 25% of a Los Angeles-class nuclear submarine. Would it be A, B, C, or any of the above?
I'm going to say any of the above.
You got it. Which would you do? I'd buy, I guess, 25% of a submarine. I'm kidding. What would you do with money? What would you with $510 million? Do you fantasize about that? What would you do?
I would be philanthropic.
Good. And you would remember those who gave you joy, correct? People you listen to on the radio. Oh, let's keep moving. After being booted from U.S. hosting site GoDaddy, neo-Nazi website, the Daily Stormer is now being hosted by a domain name from A, South Africa, B, Germany, or C, Russia.
C, Russia.
You got it. One day after the site dropped off the web, the Daily Stormer has reappeared using a Russian domain name. Arizona Democrats have asked Donald Trump not to pardon A, Hunter S. Thompson, B, former Sheriff Joe Arpaio, or C, Matt Damon. A, B, or C?
B.
Yes, a group of Arizona Democrats is urging President Donald Trump not to pardon Joe Arpaio. As a matter of fact, they also asked the president not to come and host a rally there on Tuesday night in Arizona. According to UC San Francisco and Washington University School of Medicine, 25.6% of people injure themselves while A, jumping on trampolines, B, trimming their pubic hair, or C, protesting Nazis? Is it 25.6% of people injure themselves, A, jumping on trampolines, B, trimming their pubic hair, or C, protesting Nazis?
I have to answer this, B.
Over three-quarters of respondents said that they had groomed their pubic hair. It also found that injuries were rather common. Slightly over a quarter of those who had groomed had injured themselves in the act. How hard? What are you grooming with? Are you grooming with hedge trimmers? I don't understand how hard that is.
Hot wax.
It's the women. I got it. Well, guys, you know the worst thing that ever happened to me? I'm sitting on my bed with a pair of manicure scissors because I have a nose hair that's really long. Years ago, and I'm sitting on the bed, and I put the scissors up my nose to cut the hair, and my son, who was three at the time, ran into the bedroom and jumped up on the bed, and the scissors were embedded. I think it went up to my brain, and I forgot third grade. All right, here we go. What was recently hacked for a second time? Was it A, the DNC? Was it B, your crappy PC laptop? Or was it C, HBO?
Oh, it was HBO.
Variety reports that hackers took over HBO's Facebook and Twitter accounts on Wednesday night, sending out a message just to show they had managed to get in again. It's a different group from the original crew. Former Donald Trump campaign manager Corey Lewandowski is being accused of and sued for allegedly threatening his neighbor with A, a baseball bat, B, his pet tiger, Silas Marner, or C, visits from the Navy SEAL Team 6 in black helicopters. Is it A, B, or C?
A.
Yes, he allegedly threatened to use his political connection to bury his neighbors after a land dispute. In docs, Glenn and Irene Schwartz also claim Lewandowski intimidated them by standing outside with a baseball bat. According, and this is the last one, you're doing really well. According to the Economist Intelligence Unit's 10th annual global livability ranking, what city has the highest quality of life? Is it A, Melbourne, Australia? B, Trenton, New Jersey? Or C, Lucerne, Switzerland? Is it A, B, or C?
I've been there. A.
Is Melbourne, is it that livable? It's supposedly a great city.
It's a nice city.
It ranks number one for the seventh consecutive year, according to the Global Livability Ranking. I just came back from, followed by Vienna, then Vancouver. I just came back from Vancouver. What a beautiful city that is. Then Toronto, Calgary, Adelaide, Perth, Auckland, Helsinki, and Hamburg. You did great. And,
yeah, I just came back from Toronto on Monday.
Wow. Were you on vacation or was it business?
A family wedding.
Oh, cool. It's beautiful, right?
Mm-hmm.
Well,
nice.
You stay on the line. Thanks for listening, by the way. You did very, very well. Stay on the line, and we'll get you tickets to either Little Stephen and the Disciples of Soul at the Orpheum or Kansas at the Thousand Oaks Arts Plaza. We'll play again tomorrow for those who didn't have an opportunity, and I will sit here patiently and wait to do Crosstalk with Dr. Drew next year. Talk Radio 790 KABC. You did well. Congratulations. Be right back.